And we're going to keep the theme going here. We're going to go from the national to the state, and we're going to hear from our chair of governmental affairs, Jeff Tom, to talk to us about state legislative issues.
Okay, good evening.
Hello.
I gotta get myself together here, but while I do, I wanna make a couple of shout outs to various people. But first, we truly are lucky to have Tony Stevens. I was thrilled when I heard we were gonna have him as our hire for ACB. So let's give him one more round of applause. I don't know if she's here. I don't think she is, but whether she is or isn't, I know Pat can deliver our appreciation. I wanted to give a shout out to Jacqueline Jackson for her being chosen as Advocate of the Year down in San Diego in her Assemblyman's District.
Yeah.
That's just the type of advocate we need an ACB, and Jacqueline is somebody to really be proud of. I wanted to, one of the things that I'm involved in on behalf of this organization, it was briefly mentioned by Tony, was the AFB-led, although now it's being led by a number of people, 21st century effort on aging. I've been on a number of calls. I would have been on more, but my wife dragged me off to Maui. I didn't want to go, but, had to. So, and that's just an outstanding effort nationally. And the shout out I want to give with respect to California is one of the things that I did is forward to them the links for all the hearing and vision impairment calls that our committee here in California has done on deaf blindness issues, because they are outstanding, and I want to hear some applause for that committee's work. Mike Keithley, Annette Carter, the whole group, they're to be commended. Okay. Wanted to talk about some of the things that I have been doing on your behalf. A couple weeks ago, I was part of a strategic planning process that Disability Rights California put together, and they had, as part of their strategic planning, a panel on issues relating to blindness and deafness, and I participated as your representative on that panel. And we hope that in their strategic plan there'll be more about our issues. We'll see what comes of it. But they're here this weekend. Come talk to them. DRC is really trying to be progressive and responsive to your needs. And so make them welcome and give them your input. We have had a part to play, as small though it be, in the American Health Care Act. We are involved, and I want to thank Judy and the board for this. We are involved in a coalition for long-term care services and supports in California, which is made up of dozens of advocacy, civil rights, healthcare provider organizations. And through that coalition, we have weighed in on many of the problems that the AHCA would cause. Most gravely for California could be the loss of millions and millions of dollars in Medicaid funding, which would hurt in-home supportive services and would also hurt people on disabilities with respect to many of the optional services conceivably that Medicaid currently provides in a number of other areas as well. And I'll come back to some of the other problems that the AHCA is causing in California, just the very presence of a bill. I'll come back to that in a minute. I have been working, and you're going to hear a resolution on it this weekend. I have been working informally with a group of orientation and mobility instructors. There is a real problem, both in this state and nationally, and I hope we bring it to the attention of ACB this summer. More and more school districts, for liability and other reasons, are putting into place restrictions on the ability of special education instructors and O&M instructors to give instruction off campus. And if you can't go off campus, you can't learn very much orientation and mobility. So you will hear a resolution on that, I am quite sure, on Sunday. Let's talk a little bit about guide dogs. We, of course, had the great victory of SB 1331 last year, and we were certainly thrilled today to give Senator Fran Pavley a much-deserved award for everything that she and her staff did to shepherd that bill through. Well, I shouldn't have used the word shepherd, should I? Especially because of all the yellow and golden labs out there. Okay, but we did suffer a setback this year, last year too. Our bill to increase the scope of penalties by persons whose dogs attack service animals was vetoed by the governor. In large part, it was vetoed because we took some amendments that put in some requirements he didn't like. We're going to take those amendments out. Unfortunately, we did not get a sponsor for it this year. But this year's a tougher year because it's the first year and you can't really get started till January. And we didn't have much time. So this time we're going to start in the fall. And we are going to get ourselves a sponsor again next year. And we're going to meet the governor's demands and we're going to get this bill through. So that's something we're working on for next year. We don't know what the bill number will be, but we're going to do something. The other guide dog related issue we have is AB 1705. That is a bill that would extend the guide dog board for 4 years. We passed a resolution about 4 or 5 years ago that said if the guide dog board wasn't willing to work with us on reforms, then we would we would ask for the repeal of the guide dog board. They were not. They opposed us at every turn. Not Joni Patchy out there. I don't want to say that every board member did, but the majority did. And so we are taking a position, along with NFB, opposed to the extension of the board. It's an uphill battle this time, but I think we need to begin to express our grave concerns to the legislature, make them realize that the board is really not necessary like it once was, and set the groundwork with them and with the schools for future action. And we'll see in the coming years whether the board becomes something that is more respectful and responsive to guide dog users or less. We don't know. We'll see what can happen. SSI, I am proud to say we are the one major blindness organization that is active in the Californians for SSI coalition, and that's as it should be. Last year, after many years of cuts and stagnations in SSI to the point where the amount that SSI recipients get is below the poverty level, below 100% of the poverty level. We finally got the first increase in state money for SSI in many, many years. Yes, it was under $10 a month, so it wasn't much of an increase, but we have a governor who's very conservative when it comes to putting new money in, and with good reason, he's tried to push, and he has, successfully taken the California economy back from the brink in terms of our public fiscal situation and done a great job in that area. But what it does cause is our programs do suffer short shrift sometimes, and SSI has certainly been one of them. We do have another bill, AB 796, this year on that area. It will go pretty far, but again, I don't expect it to pass. And in part, it won't pass because the governor is very concerned about what will happen in Washington, D.C. If we lose millions of dollars in Medicaid money, which it is possible we will, then there's a big budget hole in the state budget right there. And the governor doesn't want to do anything which is going to further jeopardize our budget. And so any increases in programs of human services are very likely to be, you know, not approved by this governor this year. We'll see what happens, but it's an uphill battle. Okay, a number of you have heard about this already, and so I really want to give even some more detail tonight. We are opposing another bill, AB 1103. AB 1103 is a bill by the bicycle coalitions that would basically allow bicyclists, if they feel it is safe, to roll through stop signs and to make turns at stop signs. Up until today, it had a provision in it that, well, it didn't help us too much, but it would have required a hand signal when you were going through the stop sign. unless you were unsafe by taking your hand off the bike. It's it. But they took that out, and I'm not completely sure of all the reasons, but one of the things it does, it helps their bill in one respect, because in California legislation, there's what's called a fiscal committee key, and a bill has to go to fiscal committee if it has any kind of savings or cost to it. And one way a bill has a cost is when it creates a crime. And this bill, this hand signal requirement, would have been an infraction. So by taking it out, they now don't have to go to the fiscal committees of the legislature, which means they only have to go to one committee in each house. I found out today that the hearing is on April 17th. So if I have anybody that wants to go around to offices with me next week, and especially if we have people that want to come up for that hearing, and I'll get you the time and the room number on Monday, we need everybody there we can get. You're only going to probably be able to say your name and that you oppose the bill, but the more people in the room, the better it is for our side of the fence. And I urge people who can make it to Sacramento on the 17th to do that and to make your voices heard in the Assembly Transportation Committee. I don't know who our other allies are going to be as yet. I have heard that the Chamber of Commerce so far is neutral, which is good. Yeah, I agree with that. So, you know, this is the type of bill that I don't even think it's all that safe for, all that creates all that much more safety for bicyclists. And it certainly doesn't create any safety for pedestrians. So it's a bill we need to work hard to stop. I don't know if there's any time for questions. I think that's all I'm going to, those are the highlights that I wanted to hit tonight. I just want to mention that we are definitely one of those states that are hit hard by the ending of the uncompensated care homemaker closure type requirements. You've heard it before. Our rehabilitation program it's going to cause our recipients a real problem. But we do have some good folks, Mitch Pomerantz and Jason Holloway, on that committee. And I know they're working hard to try and do something to address those issues, but that's going to be a tough one, and we're certainly going to be vigilant on that issue as well during the years to come. So, with that, do we have time for a question or two?
Yes.
Okay, any questions? All right.
Yeah, we have one here.
It often drives me crazy that there doesn't seem to be any mechanism to combat what I guess we call siloism, even in state government. In this case, I mean, for example, one of the implications of the change in the homemaker closure, and I'll grant that I've never been a fan of that. I thought it was badly overused and often a cop-out. But nonetheless, one of the consequences of that is going to be a potentially dramatic increase in the number of premature nursing home admissions. Now, that costs the state money in terms of its share of the Medicaid costs that are going to go into those. Is there any capacity within state government to make the case to the governor's budget office that they have to do a cost-benefit analysis of both things together to do what I guess we would call dynamic scoring for anything to make any sense?
Can somebody repeat the question?
I don't think we understood the question.
My question is this. We have a problem, for example, in the curtailment of the homemaker closure options. Now, that is perceived on one level as not necessarily having any serious fiscal implications for the states. It has terrible implications for the people who don't get services. But no one has addressed it, so far as I know, in terms of its fiscal implications for the state. Its fiscal implications for the state are tremendous, are huge, because it's going to result in an increase, potentially a very significant increase, in the number of premature and otherwise unnecessary nursing home admissions, which state is going to have to help pay for through its share of Medi-Cal. So is there any capacity in state government, is there any means by which advocates can get the governor's budget office to engage in some kind of a dynamic scoring system which would make the combined implications of two seemingly separate, but not at all really separate, programmatic initiatives into question?
No. The governor feels that he has expanded Medi-Cal to a great degree, which he has. He's signed an awful lot in a Medi-Cal expansion. And I don't think there's any... He did get one tax through on a health care plan tax, and that tax may or may not go away depending upon a lot of variables. But I don't think there's any real... desire for any other broad-based Medicaid initiatives. In fact, it is very possible that one of the state's dual Medi-Cal, Medicare programs will stop, one of the pilot project programs.
There's going to be, whether the governor or you or I or anyone else likes it or not, a tremendous increase in the number of people whose Medicaid eligibility, which already exists under law, will now include nursing home admissions that would otherwise not be necessary, and those are more expensive. That's going to cost the state money, potentially a great deal of money. Is there no way in the world to bring that forcibly, if not ultimately effectually, to the state's attention?
I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, I think this is a question for another day.
Okay. Okay, I finally get the question. Sorry, Steve. We're too small of a slice of the pie to make that understandable in California anyway. Because the number of those homemaker cases in actual terms is so minuscule. The number of potential homemaker cases might have been greater, but the number that they are actually serving as homemakers is really small potatoes in comparison to...
Do we know those numbers?
What's being served by the Medi-Cal program generally.
What are those numbers? Somebody's asking, do we know those numbers?
Yes, do we know?
I don't have them right here, but they're pretty. But they're less than a third of, you know, blindness closures. Even those closures in that system are only about a third of blindness closures, and blindness closures are a small pittance of the number of disability closures generally.
Well, we take those.
And most of the non-blindness closures are not homemaker chore. We are the one disability affected most by that.
We take those numbers and we multiply them by the cost, the annual cost, to put one person into a nursing home, and then how many that would be. It would be a lot of money. And we present that to him in some manner, quickly.
Don't have that figure.
Well, that's inertia. We need those figures. It needs to go before the governor, and we need to shake him up and keep that money.
Okay, your point is made. Thank you very much. Can we move on, please?
Doesn't look like we have any other questions.
Okay. Well, Jeff, thanks again for a great report.
Okay, thank you very much.
And I think the message from both of our advocates is very clear that each of us has an important role to play in engaging with our communities and our governments in making life better for blind Californians. That concludes the items of agenda at this session. So I am prepared to bring this session to recess to begin again tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. Everybody have a good evening.